Hello. Well, I'm back here with Caitlin and Liz and Alan, and we're talking about UFOs again. But before that happens, the San Francisco Public Works head, the former head, Mohammed Nuru, got sentenced to 7 years in prison, which I'm glad to see. As I've mentioned frequently, San Francisco is amazingly corrupt. Our government, and it always has been all the way back, are many government functions run by bribery and trades of goods in illegal ways, and they finally caught the public works head as just one part of the vast amount of corruption here, and him and many people related to him are now getting long prison sentences. So perhaps that will do some good. I'm skeptical, though. I think it's like cutting the head off a hydra, just three more grow in its place. But anyway, it represents some justice happening in San Francisco government. And then Caitlin has got the UFOs.
Yes, so the UFO saga continues. There's an article by Popular Science, as well as an article by the Motherboard talking about the same thing. The Congress has recently released their budget for doing research into these UFOs, and they are apparently very interested in what's going on. As many people may have already heard, a lot of this UFO documents or information that has been collected by the Air Force has been released in recent years. And it turns out that they really have no idea what these things are. Now, I do want to point out that it's extremely unlikely that these are aliens. Okay. I want to calm people down. You know, we're not being visited by aliens. There's no reason to think aliens are coming. However, experts in the field are very perplexed about these UFO or unidentified aerial phenomenon that's happening that pilots are seeing. However, there's no easy explanation that does not either, you know, defy any known limits of technologies that we have, or is maybe some sort of new law of physics that we don't know about. Now, of course, the first thought is, not, wow, there's a great discovery to be made about what all these UFOs are. It is, let's investigate a lot of money because this might be a threat. But hey, at least it's being investigated. That's good. Like I said, though, I don't want to have people thinking that we found aliens. If aliens did come, they almost certainly would not be flying in our atmosphere. They would not be going underwater, which is what some of the UFOs do. They would not, it would be, we would have much clearer images. I'm, you know, like the energies involved in getting between one star and another star would mean that all these, if these UFOs were really coming from another star, would be emitting so much black body radiation, it would be unmistakable. You know, like you can't have a interstellar craft that's also not a weapon of super mass destruction just because of the energies involved. So I can almost assure you these are not, you know, alien craft. However, they are unidentified, and there's an increased budget to it to do research into these UFOs, which is something I never thought I would ever see our government do. But here we are. We're going to investigate UFOs.
It seems like a pack of nonsense to me. I mean, there are real things to worry about.
There are. But what's really weird is, of course, that UFOs have been known about for decades. And research has been done into them by, you know, serious professionals who aren't jumping to conclusions that these are aliens. And the result is that we still don't know what these things are. So it's worth, you know, investigating some money. But like I said, it's almost certainly not aliens. It's almost certainly not technology. My money is on some sort of natural artifact that we're just not accounting for.
From the way they move, making sudden shifts and high G maneuvers, I'm thinking it's like a reflection in the window or something.
Yeah, it almost, if you look at all the videos of UFOs, they are so undefined. You know, it's almost certainly some sort of artifact, something flying in front of the camera, a little piece of dust. Like Sam said, like it could be like a reflection, some sort of natural phenomenon at
Or
play.
you know, could it be a red herring? I mean, you know, could they be developing some sort of secretive flight technology or defense technologies, then, you know, want to deflect attention from that. Is that a possibility?
I don't think so, for two reasons. One, Congress is investing a lot of money in this. And if you've ever known Congress to ever put their money where their mouth is, you know that is rare. But also, two, that would require, well, two, okay, so two, Congress has all access to, you know, secret and classified documents. So if it was just, you know, a military technology demonstration of some kind that we're doing, then it would be much easier to bury by just ignoring it, saying, oh, it's just UFOs, ignore it. Or they could even say, oh, it's just technology we're developing, just look the other way. You know, there are easier ways to get people's attentions away. And third, conspiracies on that level are almost impossible for the government to keep. Like, the government's really bad at conspiracies, really, really bad.
Well, you know, I'd like to see them knock this off and focus on important things like remote viewing and psychically killing people with powers like in the Menderic goats, you know. They've always had these crackpot things going on in the military.
That is true. The military in the past have had, you know, research done into like ESPs, and they should have. I mean, you know, if it's possible to like remote view into your enemy's, you know, warehouse or secret documents, whatever. I mean, we should definitely investigate it. That doesn't mean there's any merit to it.
Well, the Marvel movies get a lot of attention. Yeah. And apparently some people don't know their fiction. But anyway.
Yeah. I don't think UFOs are fiction, meaning we are picking something on cameras.
Yeah.
It's just almost certainly not alien spacecraft.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, anyway, Liz has got open access.
Sorry, I'm having some technical difficulties here.
It must be the UFOs.
It must be. So this was a pretty exciting story that came out this week. The feds have decided that, much to, I'm sure, Elsevier's dismay, they've decided that research that's funded with taxpayer dollars should be available to the public. So, scientific research publications, papers have typically been available at great cost through third-party publishers like Elsevier. And I mean, it's kind of crazy because you'll go and be doing, maybe you'll be doing research on a different project, and you'll find these papers that might cost you $200 to get a copy of it, or even more, I've seen. Or they are available through subscriptions with that come in an exorbitant cost. And for a long time, folks have thought, well, this is crazy. A lot of this research is funded with tax money, yet it is frequently not available to the scientists or medical practitioners who may need it to continue their own research. And shockingly, finally, we've come to a point where the feds have said enough's enough, and we're going to make any publications that have been funded through taxpayer dollars actually available to the public. So this is big.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, and Alan's got COVID again.
Yes, once again, this is a big report from the Brookings Institute, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank, from one of their fellows, Katie Bach, who analyzed census data, the Census Bureau Household Pulse Survey data, and found that about 16 million working age Americans have long COVID as of today. And of those, 2 to 4 million are out of work because of COVID. They are unable to work. And that, extrapolating from that, that means about $170 billion, possibly as high as $230 billion in lost wages. That's just lost wages. That's, of course, an extremely large impact to the American economy, to say nothing of the impact on these individuals and their families who presumably do need to be working, and that they're not able to is financially devastating. So this is not a small problem. Of course, when this news was released on social media, there were the usual types talking about how these long COVID sufferers are just malingerers, or the census data is all faked, or this is all one enormous hoax. But we have seen other research that has found real long-term health impacts post-COVID infection, and that multiple reinfections actually increases one's chances of developing severe long-term sequelae. So this appears to be a real phenomenon. And this survey from the Census Bureau then does begin to explain why there seems to be a persistent gap in the number of people who are working and not working. There suddenly seem to be fewer people working in the American economy today than were working prior to the pandemic. And it's not just because of the Great Resignation. It's because there just seem to be fewer people in the workforce.
Yep. This may explain the low unemployment numbers.
Yes.
Yep. Well, it makes sense. All right. And so I saw an article I thought was pretty interesting. So Ukraine is being creative in the realm of like sort of hobbyist do-it-yourselfers. They get cheap Android tablets. Their artillery people were complaining that they were working from 1980s era Soviet maps. So it would show you like a field where there's now a town. They need better maps. So they took tablets and put like Google Maps on them, and that was better. And then they improved the tablets greatly with custom software. So their tablets actually analyze artillery fire and automatically correct the artillery fire to more accurately hit the target. And they're really quite powerful. They made a mesh network. They made them so they can work even when the internet is down. And they made them each individually controlled from a central point like a domain controller so that when they fall into enemy hands, they can be remotely wiped. So they really have gone pretty far. And so the Russians actually issued a dictate to their staff that if you capture a tablet from the enemy in Ukraine, do not use it. It's like probably poisoned and sabotaged. And they say they can even use these to travel through minefields safely and stuff. So anyway, the Ukrainians continue to be quite creative at hacking cheap stuff into good military hardware. And Caitlin has got LastPass.
Yeah, so the unthinkable happened. LastPass got...
Well, sort of
unthinkable, but LastPass got hacked. So the article is by How To Geek, and it was written by Errol Wright. And so what happened? Well, LastPass is... Let me back up. LastPass is a password manager. Okay, so you store all your passwords in this like one database that's on their servers. And it syncs across all devices, which, by the way, I highly recommend people do for their personal passwords. It is much safer to have your passwords different on all accounts and then just have like one giant fortress that, you know, that has to be guarded, you know, to get into all your accounts versus having one like shared password, trying to remember your passwords. Using a password manager, I highly recommend. In fact, I recently got phished really badly, actually. And the thing that saved me was the fact that I use different passwords on all my sites. So the second I realized I got phished, I just changed that one password on that one site. And boom, I was safe again. Hackers didn't get anything. Yeah, everything's good. So, I do recommend. So despite this article, I do recommend people using a password manager. However, you know, the idea that all your passwords are in this one vault, and if someone could get into that vault, you know, it's sort of game over is a bit scary. But of course, it is much safer to have your gold locked up in a, you know, state-of-the-art, you know, Fort Knox versus having all your gold spread around, you know, rinky-dink little banks all over the place, because eventually some of those banks are going to get broken into and stuff getting stolen from. However, LastPass, the password manager, did get hacked. Now, luckily, this was hackers imitating a developer account they got in and they stole source code and stuff. They did not get any user passwords. So if you have a LastPass account and you're using it to store your passwords, you're good. As far as I can tell, nothing has changed. Your passwords are still safe. However, it is sort of a scary scenario. I think anyone who's used a password manager has thought about, what if the people that run your, that have all your passwords get hacked? And it does happen, but luckily, because they do know the value of the data they're keeping, even in this case, they got hacked and your passwords are still safe. So that should be an endorsement as to why you should be using a password manager.
Yeah, we talked about this last night in my incident response class as an example of disclosure. And two things came up. One is that the LastPass claims they do what they should do. They use encryption, so they cannot even decrypt the data at all. Only you can do it with your password, which they don't have, which means even if the hacker were to steal it, it wouldn't matter, which is definitely the right thing to do. And the other thing a student pointed out is they don't have to make this disclosure. Since they didn't lose customer data, they're not required to disclose this. They chose to disclose it just to improve their reputation among security researchers, which I think it did. But now I'm seeing a lot of people complaining. Apparently some major media outlets have been reporting this as you have to stop using LastPass and use something else because they got hacked. And I would say the opposite. I would say a company that tells you about these minor breaches that don't matter, honestly, should earn your trust.
Exactly. LastPass is still a great option to store your passwords on. It's now pay to use. There are other free open source options like Bitwarden, which if you're on a budget, I highly recommend. But I know a lot of agencies, a lot of institutions use LastPass and pay the price. I use
LastPass for free. The free account works fine.
Oh, I think they have it set up so there's like a free account, but like if you want to sync it with your mobile devices, right. I forget there's a cost.
There's some limitations on the free account, but it's good enough. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no limitations on the Bitwarden free account.
Oh, okay.
So that is an option. And Bitwarden, like I said, is open source.
So this means Bitwarden's going to go broke. That's what it means.
Pretty much. but I mean, I just like having important data, like my passwords, being in an open source environment rather than a closed source environment for me, just personally. Yeah. Although I do absolutely love LastPass as well. I think their service is amazing too. Anyway.
I don't care which brand you use, but a password manager greatly improved my life because now I know where to look for things. Before, they were just scattered in files all over the place. Anything I saved a couple of years ago, I couldn't find it. Now I know where to go for it.
Yeah. And whenever someone like gets into your like Twitter account or something, just change your password right away. I mean,
yeah,
not that you've changed your password every time I've gotten into it, but.
There's no point. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. My main single source of failure is you. Anyway, Liz has got Etherlet. And she's on mute.
Yep, that's true. I was on mute. Mm-hmm. So this is actually a really cool story about some researchers who figured out how to exfiltrate data from air gap systems using the LED indicators on network cards, though they also said that you could this method would apply to the LEDs on stuff like routers, network storage devices, printers, scanners, and other similar devices. But this is so cool. So these researchers came up with some malware that to be able to do this on an air gap system, they would have to have some kind of access, probably physical access, to deploy it. As soon as I get the malware on there, this essentially takes control of the LEDs on whatever device it is, whether it's a network card or the router or whatever, and then takes control of the LEDs and uses Morse code to communicate various secrets. So the attacker would have to have some kind of visual, visual contact with the device. But they, you know, you could do this with a bunch of things like hacked surveillance cameras or webcams and telescopes and cameras with really good zoom on it. So it was pretty interesting. And the article, which is from Bleeping Computer, included a chart from the researchers that depicted how long it takes to get various types of secrets using this method. And I thought that was kind of interesting. So it said for passwords and stuff like that, it'd be between 1 second and 1.5 minutes. 2.5 seconds to 4.2 minutes for private Bitcoin keys, and 42 seconds to an hour for 4096-bit RSA keys. So
pretty slow.
Yeah, pretty slow.
Yeah, and what's really funny is that last weekend I was giving a talk on IR remotes and how they work. And it's basically the same idea where you have an LED that flashes on and off. However, the receiver uses digital signal processing so that it's not just looking at what, it's not like a photodiode or something like that where it just sees there's light or not. It's actually taking in the light, applying automatic gain control, running probably a PLL signal to it, and then, you know, running it through processing. And then eventually that gets to a transistor and a little LED bulb then, or LED, a little IR LED can then send data at like upwards of like 50 kilohertz. Oh. And so it seems like that method could greatly be advanced with a little, you know, DSP work. The other thing that this reminds me of is that this research has been done before looking at older telecom equipment, older routers, where the LEDs would simply be tied to whether or not there was data going through at that moment. And if you got a high-speed camera, you could decode the LEDs and actually get the full speed Ethernet output from the LEDs themselves. So this is sort of a very, you know, using Morse code is a very primitive way of, you know, getting data out. And you could do this with almost anything. You could turn a webcam on and off, and webcams often have like little LEDs showing that they're on. You could do that with, of course, network cards that have little LEDs. You could turn the screen on and off, you know, like just have the screen flash on and off, or put something on the screen, like a big, like have the screen blink if like every so often, or flash, you know, every so often, like those old LED, like those old light gun games from the Nintendo. In fact, how they worked. I mean, there's so many ways you could do it that, you know, this seems like there's room for improvement. Is basically what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. All right. And so Alan has got information about school masking.
Yes, I've got a double dose of COVID today. Mm-hmm. In February 2022, Massachusetts rescinded statewide masking requirements at all of its public schools. And as a result, in the Boston area, almost all the school districts lifted those mask mandates, except for two, Boston and Chelsea. And so some researchers at some local public health institutions like Harvard, Boston Public Health Commission, decided to take a closer look at what happened thereafter in the case counts, COVID case counts among students. And what they found was that indeed COVID went up amongst the students at districts that rescinded the ban, while Boston and Chelsea numbers still remained lower. And so there was a real difference in the number of cases, COVID, based on whether or not the schools were still mandating masks. And of course, there are many other confounding variables too. But interestingly, in the case of Boston, those buildings tend to be older, tend to have worse ventilation, tend to be have more crowded classrooms and tend to have students from lower income families. And so all of those factors would push those students towards probably having a higher rate of incidence of COVID. And yet, despite those other factors, it seems that just wearing masks actually made a real difference in keeping those numbers lower than other more affluent districts with better resources. So, of course, this data will be ignored by the anti-maskers of the world who insist that children do not learn if they're wearing masks, that they're emotionally stunted, and that their communication skills are stunted. But no, it does appear that masking works in public schools. And this is something to keep in mind, seeing as we at City College still have a masking policy in place, probably something to continue keeping in place.
We do? I think nobody cares at City College, but yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, people care. People care. As a matter of fact, I received an email message that was relayed to me from apparently a fellow faculty member who had come across a student walking the halls of the science building without a mask. And this faculty member approached the student and asked why the student wasn't wearing a mask. And the student said, when I was in my CNIT class yesterday, nobody was wearing a mask. I didn't know I needed to wear one. And so word got back to me. I was faulted for not enforcing the masking policy.
Ah, well. I told them they didn't have to wear a mask in my classroom because I checked the air and the air is good and fresh in there. But when I go out, I wear a mask anyway.
Well, then we may have to blame you for that, Sam. But
you may.
But it wasn't my class because I took extreme measures like emailing students in advance and bringing spare masks to the classroom and even giving a very short presentation to the students on the importance of masking and the dangers of COVID reinfection.
Well, certainly it's true. However, to be fair, my classes have populations like 3 students in a giant. Yeah.
Lower risk, definitely.
Yeah.
Most of the students are online. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there is some merit to some parents complaining that for very young children, maskings can affect their development. Because at that age, like we're talking about kindergarten and preschool, they are studying human faces quite intently and constantly masking, I think, does affect them. I'm not saying it affects them negatively, but I think there's a case to be made that perhaps, and very likely it does affect very young children and how they develop socially. However, once they get into like grade school and beyond, it should not matter.
Yeah, and I noticed that article did not test the effect on learning, just the effect on COVID.
Right.
All right. And then, all right. So I thought this was a very interesting thread of someone put on Twitter. A person named René Carmel, probably a French name I could pronounce differently, in World War II, hacked the punch cards to the computer systems at that time. And what this French comptroller general of the French army did was modify the card reading machines so they could not read the particular digit that designated the religion of people in the French system. The result of this was that in the Nazi occupation, in other places, they killed like 75% of the Jews, but in France, they only killed 25% of the Jews because they couldn't find them, because this ethical hacker trashed the system so they could not use the computers of the time to find the Jews. So it's pretty impressive. Yeah, yeah.
So this should be the goal of hackers worldwide, is to mess up the Nazis, essentially.
Yes, yeah. This is an impressive bit of ethical hacking that worked.
Yes. Just keep that in mind.
In fact, he was caught and his gang, and they were all tortured and killed by the Nazis. But before that happened, they saved a whole lot of the Jews.
Yep.
So, all right. And so Caitlin's got the call center voice adjustment.
Yeah, in today's dystopian future that we're all living in this boring dystopia, Vice has an article talking about call center software that makes people with foreign accents sound like white Americans. And this is written by Edward Onguesso Jr., So this article talks about how these people at Stanford, taking inspiration from the most god-awful dystopian ideas ever, decided to create software that takes in that something that people are saying, reprocesses it as sort of text-to-speech, and then outputs it in somewhat real-time to a, like a white American voice. So, you know, there would be a slight delay, obviously, but the call center people who recently, I just don't have the time to mess with these people anymore. So they've been calling me, and I just call them out immediately and just watch and listen to all the responses, which are so interesting. But anyway, this software supposedly will hide the fact that these people are from like India or from other parts of the world, you know, and just play into American sort of racist tropes where, you know, we sort of expect people to sound like white Americans when, of course, people shouldn't have to sound like white Americans. You know, and then also, of course, the main reason this will be used, of course, will be for, you know, scammers to pretend like, oh, no, we're not from Ghana, you know, or for like romance scammers. They're going to use this technology to pretend to be someone they're not. You know, like this is only going to be abused in bad ways. There's no good use for this technology.
What I read about this, it's not quite there yet. It still sounds kind of like text-to-speech, like when the robot bot voice reads. So, but as we know, that's just version one, and these things tend to improve significantly as time goes by. And it was interesting because when we were, first time we went to China, which was, I want to say, 2018 maybe?
Sounds right.
Baidu had these little translator devices that were pretty incredible as far as being able to translate English to Mandarin, or there were several other languages that were supported. But one of the most interesting things about it was some of their engineers told us at the time that they had the technology to basically, if they had a 20 to 30 second sample of your voice, they could imitate you so perfectly, like your own mother wouldn't recognize it as being a robot on the phone. And I thought that was really fascinating. And it also kind of makes this story reminds me of that, because even though it may not be ready for prime time quite yet, it's not much of a stretch to think that it will be indistinguishable from just a regular unadulterated human pretty quickly.
Yeah, let me introduce you to something really quickly. This is a site called 15.ai. And it takes in samples from popular cartoons and personalities. And it does a really good job of generating text-to-speech using those samples. And so I'm going to give an example here. I'm going to push generate. And it's going to slowly generate is by MIT. Okay, so if I play some of these samples, you'll see how good this sounds.
This is an example of text-to-speech. This is an example of text-to-speech. This is an example of text-to-speech.
So as you can see, the way it works is that it not only does a sort of realistic job of taking in the SpongeBob's actor, who I think is like Tom Kenny, and making different samples from that with different intonations every time. And of course, you could do, you know, My Little Pony. Let me pull that up. And you can set the emotional cues as well. Let me play this.
This is an example of text-to-speech. This is an example of text-to-speech.
And so that's, of course, Tara Strong. But of course, you know, you could basically do anyone that you can get enough voice samples from. So the idea that, you know, this technology is, you know, so advanced is ridiculous. We have it now. You can just take text, throw it into the site, and then get realistic voice samples that, you know, rival professional voice actors, you know, doing their own voices. So
you know what this means. Now that people are in lockdown at home and they just interact over Zoom, it could be everybody else is gone and everyone you're talking to is all just a computer.
It absolutely could be. However, if you don't have enough voice samples, you can usually tell that it's kind of robotic. But if you have enough voice samples, if you have, weekly recordings of, your favorite cartoon character, you can get a realistic sounding AI.
So if I get a phone call that is purportedly from Caitlin, but the entity on the other end is saying things like hacking is bad, scam baiting is wrong, don't do it, there's a good chance that it might not really be Caitlin.
That could be. That could be. Let me pull up the doctor here. Have the doctor say it.
Hacking is bad. Scam baiting is wrong. Hacking is bad. Scam baiting is wrong.
Well, there you go. Yep. All right. And Liz is going to grow new organs.
Yeah, this is a really cool story in the MIT Technology Review that came out. A company has developed something that is just mind-blowing to me. So typically, liver transplants are in high demand. There are not enough livers for people that need them. It's a very sensitive transplant because you can't really, transplant a damaged liver into somebody, apparently. And a lot of the time throughout the harvesting process or for a variety of other reasons, livers might be too damaged to transplant into a recipient. And it has led to a lot of folks not being able to get the transplants they need. So this is just fascinating. It's the culmination of at least 10 years of research and development. But they have figured out how to inject, figured out how to inject cells into lymph nodes that will generate essentially mini livers in the recipient. And it's pretty fascinating. According to their research, when they, which they've done so far on pigs and a few different animals, once they inject these cells into the lymph nodes, they're essentially able to rescue and regenerate the pig's liver. And so now they're starting to try this in humans. And it would be pretty cool if this tends to work, because they figured out that they could essentially save 40 people with one. They can use some of those damaged livers that they may not be able to transplant into a recipient from a donor, and could potentially use one liver to save 40 people, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they don't get full liver function. They get partial liver function from these small livers, but still, it's an improvement.
Yeah, it is partial, but enough to save you, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds great. And Alan has got Peter Thiel. I hear a lot about him, but I don't really understand him.
Yes, well, in our last podcast, we talked about Blake Masters, the Republican candidate for the Senate seat in Arizona, and how Blake Masters received about $14 million in campaign donations from his friend and boss, Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel, of course, is the big-time Silicon Valley investor, one of the co-founders of PayPal, along with, interestingly, Elon Musk. And he's invested in 5 of the 10 biggest Silicon Valley companies, including Facebook. So the man has considerable say in the Valley, and he's got the money to back it up. So what he does actually does have real consequences, not only for the VC and startup world in Silicon Valley, but well beyond it, now that he's funding candidates like Masters and J.D. Vance in Ohio and Josh Hawley in Missouri. So last time we started talking about Thiel's fascist tendencies, and I said I'd talk about it again this week, and so here I am. And the people may not really appreciate what fascism is. You know, they just hear fascism and think Nazis, but it is something of a distinct political ideology, even if in some ways it's a bit incoherent. It's not nearly as structured as, say, Nazism. But this link here is from a fellow by the name of John Gans, writing on Substack, definitely writing from a leftist perspective. This is this particular piece here is definitely a critique of Peter Thiel from a particular ideological stance. Nevertheless, sometimes these critiques are more trenchant than what you would get in mainstream media. And there's a lot to critique in the case of Peter Thiel, because, for example, Thiel once wrote in a piece for the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank, quote, "I no longer believe that freedom and democracy are compatible." And he goes on to say, and this is just to summarize what he's saying, because if you empower the demos, the people, they will eventually vote for restrictions on the power of capitalists, and therefore restrictions on their, i.e. the capitalists' freedom. He also says, Peter Thiel does, "Since 1920, the vast increase in welfare beneficiaries and the extension of the franchise to women, two constituencies that are notoriously tough for libertarians, have rendered the notion of capitalist democracy into an oxymoron." So he obviously doesn't have very sympathetic views towards any kind of welfare to people, and for that matter, the franchise to women, as in giving women the right to vote. So I guess that's a pretty strong and damning indictment on his political views. I mean, after all, he does have a political agenda, and that agenda may not be entirely consistent with American ideals. So you have to find some other alternative form of government, and that apparently might be fascism.
Yeah, well, I think this is pretty common Silicon Valley and Randian libertarianism. The idea is that the rich people will be oligarchs and they can do whatever they want, and the poor people should just like shut up and stay in line.
Well, yes, except at that point it stops being libertarianism and crosses over into fascism.
All right. The it's like a distinction without a difference, I think. But anyway.
Yes, if we have a particularly negative view of libertarianism, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it sounded good when they thought the government shouldn't intrude on your life, but in practice it seems to be rich people claiming that they should just be able to take more and more money and not help anybody else.
Yeah, I think it's also important to make the distinction between civil libertarianism and this economic capitalist libertarianism. Civil libertarianism being a rather strict interpretation of individual rights and the right to be free of intrusion by the government, versus this more economic libertarianism, which of course is very political too, which instead seems to be more interested in preserving the unfettered economic quote-unquote rights of capitalists, i.e. taxes are bad, no taxes.
Yeah, to be fair, I think that's true to the original American concept of capitalism, like in 1900, that the rich should just get rich without bounds and the rest should be content with the crumbs that fall from their table through the trickle-down theory.
Yes, yes, this is entirely true. Although the wealthy of the past did seem to have at least some trace of noblesse oblige. And so people like Andrew Carnegie funded thousands of public libraries around the country, which is something that Peter Thiel is most definitely not ever going to do.
Well, he's funding the MAGA movement on the right. And are you grateful? Apparently not.
Yes, yes, I'm very.
He's improving the world in that regard.
Yes.
All right. And Liz has got an Iranian APT.
Yeah, this was kind of a cool story, and I'm surprised it's not getting more more press, though. It did just come out within the last 48 hours. This tool called Hyperscape has been known to be used, and maybe that's why in this story it says that it's been around for a couple years. Has been used to target people's Gmail, Outlook, Yahoo accounts, and essentially this thing can they've been working on this for a couple years and really improving it to the point that now it can an attacker can use it to essentially exfiltrate a target's entire email inbox, which is pretty cool and pretty wild. So want to get my hands on this to try it out.
Yeah, all right. And Caitlin turned into a strange person there briefly.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I was. When we're done, I have something to show.
Let's see it.
Oh, okay. So I want to show you Tim Curry's greatest performance ever. Oh,
okay.
I'm going to turn on original sound. There we go. Sorry about that. I forgot I was doing this. Turn on audio.
Commander, you've rained on my glorious parade. For this, I'm sending everything I've got at you. But I won't let you have the satisfaction of catching me. I'm escaping to the one place that hasn't been corrupted by capitalism. Space!
There we go. That's all I wanted to show. Just okay. All this talk about capitalism this made me remember Tim Curry's greatest performance.
All right. Well, that's it for this one, and we'll be back on Tuesday.